This is Jason Scott of TextFiles.com. During the course of filming the BBS documentary, I traveled through California in July of 2002. I had about a dozen interviews lined up, and one of them was with a man named Ben Gardner, who had run an AIDS information BBS through the late 80s and early 90s. I found out that because he was employed by the Screen Actors Guild and had not cleared the interview, he would be unable to appear on camera. I asked him if it was possible for us to perhaps have a conversation and record it with the camera without recording his face, and he said that was okay. What you're going to hear are the 40 minutes of tape relevant to BBSs, AIDS, running an information service in the face of a disease that you want to get the word out about, and a number of other subjects. It's one of the best interviews that was done. I'd like to thank Mr. Gardner for both sitting down with this interview and giving me so much insight and information about a very interesting BBS.
So I guess the first question is, what got you into BBSs in the first place?
Let me see if I can remember. I think I read about them somewhere, heard about them, and I called up somebody and said, where do you find them? And he told me where. He gave me the number. Oh, and then I think at the store. They were mostly stores at that time. There were a couple of porn sites, but there weren't very many of them either. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what year we're talking about. It's pretty far back. 1980, 81. Somewhere in there. I don't really remember. Mm-hmm. And I was not interested in buying computer parts. Of course, I was interested in the porn. But I very quickly discovered that that was a total time waster. And so I dropped that and let it go for a year or two. Then it developed a little bit. And there was at least one site that was not strictly porn. I can't remember what it was. Then we get to 1984, and AIDS by then was the big thing around here. And I was involved in the creation of Mobilization Against AIDS. I was one of the founders. And our idea was to get information out. And one day it hit me suddenly. Information, that's what a BBS could be. So I said, I think I'll start one. And they all said, oh, yeah, fine, okay. They were not in the least bit interested because it was not on the tip of everybody's tongue. Hardly anybody had ever heard of it. And the few that had heard of it were not talking about AIDS. There was nothing in the newspapers about AIDS in those days except an occasional lurid headline. No real information. So the first year that Mobilization Against AIDS was running, I ran the BBS. There had been one, I think, that died because the guy who was running it died. And he set up a tree that was so difficult to find your way around, he didn't get very many callers. I set up, I was going to set it up on Xenix. I called somebody, Frank, I've forgotten his name now, wonderful guy, gave me an old Altos. With it was the machine, and I called up Al. He said it isn't working. Call him up, and they'll help you fix it. I called him up, and I said, explained what it was all about. And they hadn't heard much about AIDS at that time. This was Altos down in the valley, and they were a great company. More than half of their computers were in Europe. Their market was not really here at all. It was in Europe. And they were interested, and after being shunted around a little bit, I got to talk to the guy in the department that gives things away. And he said, gosh, he said, I think we could help you. Rather than fix that old machine, he said, maybe we got one around here we can give you. Wow, I thought that was terrific. He said, do you want it on Xenix or CPM? Well, as I've been running on an Osborne, with a single telephone, I said, maybe, but multi, what is it, CPM had a multi, capability for a while, but that was limited. I said, I think I'd probably better go to Xenix and learn that. Okay. So they gave me a machine. Unfortunately, the size they gave me, the system took most of the machine. And I literally had to dump files in the evening so that people could load stuff on during the next day. And it wasn't long before they gave me another one that had a greater capacity. And they also said, you've got a guru? And I said, well, yes, thinking of Mark Pearson, whom I knew, who was a Unix guru those days. And I called up Mark and I said, what are we going to do? I've got this thing, I don't really know how to run it. Oh, he said, I'll come over and I'll help you. So he wrote the software for it. He looked at it. We had a Unix BBS written in, what, I don't know. But it was generic. And Mark took a look at that and he said, you know, I looked at that very carefully yesterday. And he said, I think it'd really be easier to start from scratch. So I'll write a whole new one. And he did. And in early 1988, he brought it over here, January 4th, 1988, installed it, and it worked fine right off. And then we began to get calls. We got calls from Brisbane. That's just a few miles from here. Mm-hmm. We got calls from San Jose. We even got a call from somewhere on the other side of San Jose. Mark said, wow, we're really, Morgan Hill, that's what excited him. All the way to Morgan Hill. These were, of course, dial-ups. And it's 50 cents or so to call from down there. And we didn't get very many calls for quite a while. But then the word spread. And we did begin to get quite a few calls. And it ran, and that was 1988. Mark began taking AZT, and he had the euphoria, the, what do they call, the pink honeymoon. You get to feel great for a few weeks. Mm-hmm. And at the end of 19 weeks, usually they die. This is the heavy doses they were giving in those days. So during those weeks, we didn't know he was going to die. But during those weeks, he polished the program so it would work. But he never really did finish it. However, he documented it very carefully so that somebody else could finish it if necessary. And then he died about the time I was getting calls from now from all over the world. I documented it pretty carefully. I had calls from 7 countries in 5 different continents. Japan, Australia being 2 of the continents, Europe, of course. None from South America, and there's one other curious. Oh, I think Australia. I don't remember. At any rate, there were calls coming from all over. And I don't know how they did it. One guy called from Rome, and he was on the phone so long. Finally, I asked him, I sent him a message. I said, how the hell can you manage this? Oh, he said, they have an 800 number line at the embassy. Doesn't cost anything. But people did call at their own expense. And I took a totally passive position. I had no budget, no funding, and no assistance from anybody around here, at first at least, except Mark. And Mark had expertise, but not much money. And he was dying. And so it was a long time before I had an assistant of any kind. By that time, though, I was getting pretty well known. This was the best, biggest in the world, right here. Those were my 15 minutes of fame. Sometime late 1989. And that continued, and I thought, of course, wow, you know, I'm going to go on and be one of the greatest people in history, blah, 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 not realizing it's a very fast-changing field. And Tom Jennings' thing that we were talking about earlier popped up, and a lot of people began doing that, and they had an AIDS network on that. And Mary Elizabeth down in San Capistrano, she got into that, tried to get me onto it. And I said, no, I didn't want to change the software. It worked fine. Leave it the way it is. And that went on in 1990. And I got some work. The thing paid for itself. I solicited the membership. You had to be a member. That means I had to have some kind of a name and some kind of an address. And I would allow people to be anonymous if they wanted to, but a great many of them were not. And I was able to send them letters asking for money, and they did send money. It was a small percentage, but it was enough to pay all the bills. And it even helped with my rent for a little while. But then I met Richard Karpinski. I think that was his name. He was the sysadmin for the medical school computer on Parnassus. That's UC Med. It's a biggie. Mm-hmm. And he was one of those sysadmins who never answered any calls. He had a queue, an email queue from here out to the street. And he was the only one who knew how to run the thing, which frustrated a lot of the doctors. They eventually got rid of him. They trained somebody else without telling him, and then suddenly they told him his job was ended. But in between, he persuaded me to put my database on his computer, and I did. And that was the point when Gopher began happening. At first, it was just the medical school students who were reading it. They were the only ones who knew about it. But by means of Gopher, some of the people in faraway places began to read. There weren't very many of them. Gopher seemed to have disappeared about as quickly as it appeared. And then we had our present internet. What do we call it, anyway?
World Wide Web.
Yeah, www. Much more easier to operate. And Gopher was complicated. You had to do all this gobbledygook. You had to create the path to the where you wanted to go. And there was no central registry or any automatic lookup. So about the time WFW took hold was about the time Karpinski got canned. And they told me that as I was not a student and not a member of the faculty, I should have to go elsewhere. They were going to cancel my account. I said, well, at least have the decency to remove my files, because they belong to me, not to you. And reluctantly, they did. They knew it was a valuable medical research because there was still so little out there about AIDS that was accurate and a great deal of gossip. And I collected quite a lot of stuff. It was interesting, and it was there was nothing of certified truth in those days. Mm-hmm. So it was as good as anything was around. About that time, somebody that I had known, I went to the opera in a group one time, the Ring Cycle, and this rather fat young man sat next to me and fell asleep during the first act at $100 a seat. And that's all I learned about him that day. I found out he could easily afford $100 a seat and sleep through it if he felt like it. And he was starting something for gay and lesbian people, a server, I think you call it. It was for people who are not allowed on AOL, and not allowed on this, and not allowed on that. And it was to be for lesbians and gay people alone. That's it, nobody else. And he wanted to buy a computer. So the one he had wasn't up to it. He had an XT, if you remember those. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to get a more modern one, but he didn't want to fork out the money. So I said, well, we can raise money. I have a 501c3. We can solicit money. That way, people don't have to pay taxes on it, and then we can buy it, and we won't have to pay a sales tax. Great, he said, let's do it. So we did. We bought the computer from one of those places that builds your computer for you out in Taravelle, and they did an excellent job. In fact, I bought one myself at the same time. That's aside from the point. We got it going, and I moved the database over to it from the medical school computer. And that involved quite a little trickery. Roger said, just put it on there and they'll find it. We'll put it into the web page position. And it didn't take an awful lot of tweaking till we got it, but it was different from any other web page. And it has never looked like other web pages. Finally, I created an index HTML that looks somewhat normal. But you go from there into the database and you just fish your way around. Mm-hmm. I had a search feature that, of course, didn't work on the web page. It worked fine on the BBS. There was a lot of changeover. And at that time, the hits had been about 25 to 50 a day on the medical school computer, and then it started to increase, and it increased quite a lot. It went up to about 1,200 a day, and it stayed up. That was 95. It stayed up, and it's increased somewhat even since then. Now, this is a database that's practically no change. For the first couple of years there, I did add publications, but then I discovered, as I was telling you earlier, I discovered that these publications had their own web pages now, so there's no point struggling to put them up on mine. They got their own, and put a link up instead, and I did that. So basically, it's a web page, a database that has not substantially changed since 1995. And yet the hits continually increase. The level 1,200 went up to about 2,000. And in the last 3 years, it's gone up to about 5,000 a day, with occasional peaks at 20,000, 50,000, 80,000. It was averaging 40,000 for quite a while. I don't know, I suppose people were gobbling the whole database. I don't think that was single users by any shot. But I have analyzed the hit record. I use the Adobe server on that machine. It uses the Adobe server. And as you probably know, this automatic. It gives you a hit record. And it shows whether they read and what they read and did they download. And I discovered, I expected that they would download only the new stuff. No, not a bit the case. And I'm not talking about a single gulp of a huge number of hits. I'm talking about the average. I've gone through segments a couple of months at a time, over and over, and they shot all over the database. There's no real pattern to it. Just like I expect a BBS caller would have done. And the level now is somewhere around 5,000 a day, still. Which surprises me, because it's very difficult to get any funding for it. Nobody sends me a check anymore. And that is kind of annoying. But on the other hand, it doesn't cost much anymore. I think my phone bill is something like $13 a month. and only even that much. Because, you see, it's run two machines away from here. We've now had to progress. That thing began with about 500 people sending maybe 100 messages a day. It's grown now to 50,000 people with about 350,000 messages a day. And we got a T1 that's two machines away from here. Mm-hmm. The one I call is at Roger's house. And that one, in turn, links to the one downtown, which I don't know where it is. We'll never see it. You know, it's a big one. And it's part of a much bigger system down there. And it costs a hell of a lot of money. But again, 1.5% of the people give enough money to run the whole thing. We figured out what would happen. If everybody gave $2, we'd have enough. We'd have our budget two or three times over. But it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. Some people give $500. A lot of them give $10, $25, $50, something like that. So that works out. We go through anxiety on fundraising. But I don't do that anymore. For a long time, I was the treasurer. Then they set up a new thing, and I turned over $11,000 to the new treasurer, and I haven't any idea what goes on since then. Mm-hmm. I'm practically out of the day-to-day administration. All I do now is I run lists, which are vaguely related to that. I used to put them on. I decided, I don't think this is right to put list correspondents. I told everybody I was going to do it, and one or two objected and went away mad, but most of them did not object. I eliminated any identifying. For instance, I took away all the site names, just left Bozo instead of bozo@yoursite.com.
Right.
And I stripped them that way and put them on, and then I decided not to do that anymore. So now it's totally unchanged, with the exception, what is it I put on there once in a great while? So I don't know. It's not a big deal, whatever it is. Because I run other BBSs and other web pages. Mm-hmm. So that's been my experience up to date. I don't know where it goes from here.
Did you see anything once you put your BBS up that was trying to do the same thing you were doing? I mean, did you find any other avenues that were trying to get information out like you were?
Yes, there were. There have been, periodically, there have been ones who started up. They figured that I had a good thing going. They'd get a good thing. They'd, you know, be the big one. They all failed, except one. That's Mary Elizabeth down in San Juan Capistrano. She runs Aegis, which is now she's got funding. I refused to go that trip. She found a pharmaceutical company that gave her a bunch of money so she could afford to pay some people to do it. But she was doing it out of a trailer, in a trailer park, on a shoestring for quite a while. Also, one other thing about hers, she put anything and everything on there. Every single government announcement, policy statement, report, study, you name it. And I think most of those things aren't worth the paper they're written on. So I refuse to put them up. I put a link to it, but now I won't put them up. And but the result is she has by far the biggest. It's gigabytes now of information. And there's a considerable problem there again. How do you manage that much information? Organizing it has become... She's got one full-time employee, I think, who that's his job, is to the librarian, take care, make sure people can find things. And there have been others that tried, and they go for a few months, and then they either die, as all of my assistants have died. It's very sad to have... say that, but the only people who helped were the people who had AIDS, and they did not get better. They took all the medicines and they died. I'm one of the people who advocates against believing the government and taking all those medicines, because I know a few people who stopped taking the medicines and they're not dead. They're doing fine. But that is not a popular thing here in San Francisco. So I kind of dropped out of the controversy. I don't want to go and have to fight with people everywhere I go about on this subject. I figure if they want to poison themselves, they have every right in the world to do it.
Do you think that your BBS has saved lives?
Yes, I think it has. Because I put both sides of a controversy on, and that allows people to make up their minds with, they hear both sides of an argument. And if they all, or most of them, make up their minds to take the stuff, I can understand that. It's really frightening to be up against something that nobody knows really what causes it. It's much safer to think, well, we know what causes it. You take this here, Drano. Never mind, it's a poison. It's better than dying, isn't it? But it kills you.
Right.
And that's the sad part of it. I got two new books here. About a guy who was really forced out of business and everything else, because he published some of the stuff that I'm talking about, exposing what we both feel are lies and real scam, which is understandable. A lot of medicine is guesswork. People don't know that until they look really closely into it. But when we think medicine is a science, well, no, it's been called the art of medicine for a long time. Because part of it is how you treat the patient, and the patient's emotions are very important. With AIDS, your emotions are thinking, oh my God, I've got it, I'm going to die. See, then your emotions are pointing in that direction. You go to the doctor and say, well, we have a very hopeful medicine here. We expect there may be something really in this. Oh, maybe I won't die so soon. Now, that's not very scientific, but that's the basis of most of the thinking that I hear about around here. And again, I don't want to stay in it. That's why I got into doing video. I made a couple of trips and bought a camera and made a couple of trips, and it one thing led to another, and now I'm doing mostly video.
What kind of, did you at the time get feedback for your BBS from people?
I used to send it out, quote it, and send it out on my solicitation letter. Gee, you saved my life. Gosh, this is wonderful. This is the best thing I've ever, that kind of stuff. Of course, there are a lot of them, and I also got little hate mail, but mostly people who didn't like it would just go away. Mm-hmm. I have no idea how many of them there would be. I presume that there were a good many who liked it. Now, what they did about it is another question. Also, the context was vastly different in those days. You know, AIDS until 1991 was almost entirely a gay disease. Then they found out that black people were getting it. Then they found out in Africa, a lot of people were sick. Maybe a lot of people have been sick in Africa for centuries. And the difference in Africa is that half of them are male and half of them are female. That is not true in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. It is not true in the United States generally, or in Europe. But I think it's true in South America. I'm not sure, I've forgotten. But it's like it's almost a different disease. And in the meantime, of course, the public relations has been very powerful in favor of the treating HIV as the cause of AIDS and medicines as the remedy, despite the fact they haven't cured a single person yet. Mm-hmm. It's astonishing. Did you know that it took the medical world 150 years to catch on that scurvy is not created by a bug? It's a diet deficiency. Mm-hmm. Proof was there. It took from the time the proof was available until the time the medical establishment accepted it, it was 150 years. I don't know who will be around 150 years from now, but they may say, well, what the hell was all this AIDS stuff about? I don't know. Yeah. On the other hand, they may say, what were those guys objecting to? Obviously, AIDS is a killer. Because look, it killed most of Africa. I don't know.
I mean, it sounds to me, I mean, you've had to keep your face in the disease's movements and happenings now for almost 20 years at least.
Yeah.
And, I mean, how do you think it's affected you? And, you know, not in terms of, it, you know, as a person, having to always be on top of what's happening and looking into the face of it.
It's, I've survived it. I have more life than that, of course. But it's been a very heavy thing. I've found a tremendous relief when I get into taking pictures, learning about taking video. Different subject, of course, completely. I began that because of my interest in theater and videographing stage readings and plays and stuff like that. And I felt like a great weight had been lifted off my shoulders. And also, occasionally I run across somebody and the subject comes up and I realize, now, am I going to carry that torch or am I going to just let him go on without saying anything? And usually I just let him go on without saying anything because I've been through that so many times with people say, well, yeah, but how can you say that? Because so many of my friends are dead, as if that were a scientific fact in research. It is an unpleasant fact, but it's not nothing to do with research. It doesn't show anything one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And so that has been my... And also, I think 20 years is enough in that subject. I'm not getting anything out of it. Right. Nobody's paying me to do it. And also, the fact that there's so few people around here agree with me at all. We had a while for, there was a group here, which happened to be started by some rather cold personalities. It's not a good way to start a group. And they had meetings for about 2 or 3 years, and I kept going, as I also have a bookstore. Here's some books on AIDS I sell, and I would take a bag of books over there and set them up on the table and sell them. Mm-hmm. And I sold around. And then I didn't sell anymore, and I thought, wait a minute, this group is saturated. It's the same 45 people every time we meet. They come in from Marin, they come from, you know, all over the place, but it's not a growing or changing group. Mm-hmm. So I dropped it, and by the way, the group evaporated. I guess other people decided the same thing. There's some things it's too much to fight. It's like trying to get the United States to stop doing things to other countries. Mm-hmm. There's much too much pressure the other way.
Do you have any other memories of the BBS community that you were a part of that you might remember? Like how other places were before they went away?
There was a gang of BBS people. Mine was the only non-pornographic site. All the rest of them were porn. And we used to have meetings and we'd decide things, and it was kind of nice to see the actual people who ran these other BBSs. But as you might expect, we were kind of like a meeting of spiders. We were all used to being alone, and getting together was not really such a great idea. And so that group kind of evaporated. I don't know what became of it. But I forget that the other part of your question was.
Well, mostly I was just looking for any other thoughts on, you know, I mean, it sounds to me like when you started your BBS, you were starting a BBS that was pretty unusual compared to what you knew of. I mean, you know, there might have been ones like that, but you weren't aware of them. So basically you were striking off on your own and saying you were looking at a BBS as, I could use it this way. And there wasn't anyone that you were going, well, he, whereas somebody might come along to your BBS later and gone, oh, well, if you can do something on AIDS, I could do something for cancer survivors, or I could do this and get an idea. You struck off on your own. And I was just wondering, you know, I'm just trying to hear any other thoughts you had on that environment, because I would assume there was some reaction to it, and you might have been caused you to keep more of an eye on, you know, the competition or the others, like you said, you got involved in the group. You know, just basically anything like that.
Well, no, I can't think of much else. I concentrated on this because at the same time I had other things to do. So say perhaps 2/3 of the day was taken up with other stuff. Mm-hmm. 1/3 work and 1/3 I do play sometimes. And not all on the computer. And I had people living here with me with AIDS. That was not at all easy. But I had the space. This was the bedroom at that time. And then I realized this is wearing me down too much. For one thing, you couldn't charge them appropriate rent, a decent rent. So it actually cost me money. Mm-hmm. And of course the inconvenience and the sadness. You have somebody that's dying in your house. It's not nice. So I decided I didn't want to do any more of that. I never thought of running a BBS on any other subject. Now I do have a few lists. One of the things I got into was caregivers. And one of the lists I run is the caregivers list. It began because a nurse was taking care of somebody. How did I forget, I think she called the BBS a lot. And he died. And she decided that she would devote her time to teaching people how to take care of people with AIDS. And she set up a thing called Home Care Companions. And it's been a real struggle because the people who need to learn about home care don't have the time. Mm-hmm. It's the one guy that has the job, the other one has AIDS. Well, the guy has a job, is he going to go take care of the lover, or is he going to go to a school and learn how to take care? There isn't time for both. And that was a real conflict. She solved it somewhat, but it was very difficult. And of course, there was a great shortage of hospital caregiver help, paid help, mm-hmm. when AIDS hit. Then they started bringing people from the Philippines and places like that, and that eased it up a lot. But still, you don't train somebody from another country to take care of Americans in a hurry. Mm-hmm. And I think that the city did awfully well. Dianne Feinstein did a wonderful job with that. Only the only nice thing she did when she was mayor, as far as I'm concerned, she went to Washington and bulldozed them into giving $2 million, which was a lot of money in those days, for AIDS care here in the city. And she never got much credit for it. She was the only one in the whole country that managed to dig money out of Washington for AIDS, mm-hmm. back then. That was about 1983, I think. But there are a whole lot of other issues in life. I'm much concerned now with my neighborhood, which is not anymore really an AIDS thing. when this all started, you could go out in the afternoon at 3 o'clock and you meet one or two people, obviously with age. They look like they're 95 years old and they're being helped by a younger man. And you discover they're both the same age, one of them has AIDS. You don't see that anymore. I don't know where they are, what they're doing, but that is a big change. So you might say it's out of sight and out of mind now. It exists. Statistically, there are a lot of people in the city living with AIDS, but they're taking all these remedial drugs and uppers and downers and whatever and whatever, and they're more or less invisible. Mm-hmm. The idea of having a BBS, though, has never occurred to me since the web pages began. That was it. I didn't want to go on interactive. There are interactive web pages, a lot of them now, but even when they started, I thought, well, you ought to learn how to write an interactive web. I did. Nobody used it, and I didn't push it. It seemed like stepping back a little bit. You see, the reason for running that BBS in the first place was that there was no other way to get information at that point. There was practically nothing in print. And I knew that a lot of the people who were catching AIDS were people who had computers. So it was a good fit. Very quickly it got away from that. Now it's miles away from that. Mm-hmm. There are all sorts of resources. And then the bookstore was another way that I found to cope with it. I've got quite a few different titles here on AIDS. On both sides, the ones over there are telling you how great it is to take care. No arguments, just how to take care of somebody with AIDS. Mm-hmm. Martin Delaney, who later became a real monster, was responsible for an excellent book way back, I forget, about 82, I think, 83, somewhere in there. And that all happened, but most of the people involved in that are dead now. One of my new heroes, no surprise to you, Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. This is the nice side of something that really is missing about AIDS, the magic. The magic is all a magic of horror in AIDS, but the magic of Harry Potter is fun. Mm-hmm. And it's quite positive. And see, it's very clear, but there are dark wizards and bad wizards that we don't want to have anything to do with. She wants to have everything up and up, mm-hmm. and make people better. And that's the tough thing about AIDS, I think. It has persuaded so many people into a depressive cycle that goes down, down, down. But that's not new. People have been doing that. Governments have been doing that for a long time to their people. Now, the exciting thing now, I think, about electronic communication is the fact that it is uncontrollable. And the government is discovering, and it won't admit it, it really cannot control the internet. They think they can. And maybe that in the long run will be... You see, they couldn't control the BBSs either. But that wasn't a big deal at that time. It was to us, but in terms of the whole world, I don't think it was big. The net now has become so fantastically big. And most people didn't foresee that, I don't think. So that's about all the thoughts I have.
Okay. I do have one other question.
Sure, what?
I guess the fundamental question is why you felt you needed to take this mantle on.
It was my way of relating to what was happening around me. I don't have AIDS. And I'm twice as old as most of the people who did. I'm 81 now. Mm-hmm. I couldn't feel sorry for him. Of course I felt terrible about the first few. But it got after a while, so it's like wartime, you know. You hear about somebody's dead. Yeah, okay, now what's for lunch? Mm-hmm. No, you go right on without pausing for grief. And to relate, yeah, this is a way of relating. I could at least provide information, and it worked. I have provided a lot of information.
That's pretty much it. I don't want to, squeeze you like a lemon out for all your information. I'm just, like I said, I'm glad even to get an audio interview with you. Because...
Well, I'm glad to do it. I'm just sorry about the SAG restriction, but they're very emphatic about that. They told me I'd be in big trouble if I did it.
Am I able to use the audio track, or should I just keep that?
No, you can use that.
I can use that.
That doesn't require, I don't belong to AFTRA. That's an AFTRA problem.
Okay.
Image is SAG. Okay. AFTRA is audio.
Yeah. It's a shame because you look great.
That's one of the reasons I have a contract.
Yep. I'm sure it gets you work.
Sure.
They pull you right in. They're like, anyway, all right, well, I don't want to take away your whole evening.
Well, thank you very much.
Please, thank you. Thank you for agreeing to this. This is wonderful.
Hope you can use it some way.
I'll find a way. I had always envisioned that perhaps there might be an audio-only version of some of them so people could listen to them online.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And use the video.
Yeah.